There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
This feels like a tremendously long time coming, having you on Group Golf Therapy, Chris. But I was reflecting on that and I realized we've actually only known each other all for 1 year.
I know.
And I think it feels like such a long time coming because of the amount that you've been able to accomplish in that time so fast, so well in just a year. It's pretty crazy. So instant flowers.
Thank you. I mean, I think I was thinking about that too the other day. Like, you guys were some of the first people that I met, really. I really knew no one. And then as you start to sort of like seep into the algorithm of this, of our little golf high school that we've got going on over here, you realize it's actually smaller than it looks. And you start to meet yes. people pretty quickly. Because I think people are a bit more open to, you know, extending the invite and saying, come on in. You know, we need more of us to make this thing happen in the way that we know it's meant to happen. So, I mean, I think out of the three of you, I think Drew, maybe like we were the first, like I hopped on with you first and I think I got on with Connor. And then finally Bradford let me hang out with him for a coffee in LA, even though he was the closest to me.
You got past the troll, yeah. huh? You got past the moat.
Yeah, we got. Yeah, we got past it, luckily. And then we became fast friends. I still don't see Bradford as much as I know I should see Bradford.
This is true.
Yeah. And then Bradford was just, you know, did me the honor of being a camp counselor at Camp Jane this weekend and just being a superstar in every single photo that came back.
He tends to do that. Yeah.
Just beautiful.
So I want to talk about Camp Jane just a little bit. And for the listeners, most of whom I'm sure are aware of what Jane is, who Jane is. But I want to give you time and space to kind of unpack your experience with Camp Jane from inception to production to attention to detail. Like, yeah, I want to let you go. And then I want to tell you my experience from being boots on the ground and helping you with it. Can you start with who Jane is, what Jane represents, and what Camp Jane meant to you to bring to life?
Jane for me is really about just redefining what a golfer can be. You know, I started playing golf when I was 15. I was on my high school JV team. I was incredibly bad at golf, but I wanted to find a sport that I can keep up with my friends and feel a part of a team and feel a part of something. You know, as I got older, time went by, I started playing golf just more casually, falling in love with it more and more and more. It just always felt a bit disconnected from who I am as a person and what my interests were and what I loved. It didn't feel like it felt in that, like it could be in that same conversation when I was talking about the movies I loved or the food I loved or the clothes I loved wearing, but it felt like it should have been. When I decided to leave my career in music and jump into golf, my first thought was, how do I connect these things that I love the most in a way that feels authentic to me and hopefully can connect with people in a bit of a deeper way? Jane is really that person that represents that I hope a lot of us can see a bit of ourselves in. You know, it's not, you know, every post, every, you know, interest, every part of the puzzle is not meant for every single person. Mm-hmm. It's just meant to find a few people at a time that might laugh at something or say, oh, I like that brand too, or I like that shirt too, or hey, feeling like a kid again at camp sounds really fun, right? And how do you start to bring people together that are golf heads or maybe intrigued by golf or maybe never golfed before, but do it in a way that feels a bit more playful, that feels a bit more welcoming and a bit more connected to just pop culture and the world that we all live in. Truthfully for me, like golf is the best game in the world, but it became an incredibly important part of my life because of what it showed me about myself, what it showed me about what I needed to work on. And you learn that very quickly by wanting to give yourself a score you didn't deserve on the golf course or wanting to snap a golf club after you hit a terrible shot, even though you only practice maybe once a week. You know, like there are all these things that this game can be a mirror for us to look at ourselves with. And you guys focus on that every day. And I think that's the part of really getting to the core of why this is special and why this game can break the ice for people so immediately is because there's a much deeper level of connection based in the pain and joy that we all get out of this thing. And for camp, you know, that's a bit more of a fun one, right? Where it's like me and we all have our group chats, like we all have our group texts with friends that golf, that, you know, we're talking about, when are we going to play? Let's get our tee times. Did you see this came out? Did you see that came out? This meme, that meme. But, you know, I just had one friend that would text me all the time, sort of as a joke, just going like, I can't, like, we got to go to adult golf camp. Like we got to go to golf camp. And every time he would just send me links of these like random things. And I'd be like, yes, like whenever you want to go, like, let's go. And that thought of this adult summer camp and doing that, you know, having that experience that I never had as a kid, now just sat in the back of my brain in a really heavy way, to the point where I had my illustrator that I work with on everything just sort of design up this concept, like t-shirt with me, that was sort of this like Camp Jane, you know, this like where we can all feel like kids again, kind of dream world space, that I was literally just going to put out as a t-shirt. As I started to think about it, I was like, this probably could be more than what I'm giving it credit for, right? And, you know, fortunately I was able to connect with Jeff Cottrell, who runs, you know, brand for Topgolf very early on, probably too early in my experience in this world, where, you know, we jumped on the phone and I was trying to explain to him what I was even doing, but I sort of didn't even know what I was doing yet. You know, I was still sort of like eyes closed, like just feeling it out in the dark. But he was kind enough to just sort of be there and lend a helping hand and just sort of be like, I'm here whenever you need me. I didn't really fully take him up on that until 9 months into it, when I felt like I really started to get a sense of what this was about and what the core mission of what Jane is, you know, here to do. And I hit him and said, I think it's time for us to connect on a bigger level in terms of what you're doing at Topgolf, with, you know, just having a place where people can take it a little less seriously and put more emphasis on spending time with people that they love and do something together that feels a bit different. So El Segundo Topgolf down here is like, that place sells itself. It's this incredible little par three, you know, 10 hole course called the Lakes, that's connected directly to the Topgolf bays. Jeff connected me with my new best friend, Connor Smith, who's another dreamer like us and like Jeff. And we all have the same sort of DNA of how do we continue to push this thing. I sat with Connor and I said, look, wouldn't it be great if we can go back to golf camp together? And wouldn't it be great if we can do it here? And that was, you know, long story short, like the sum of that conversation. He smiled and said, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Let's try to make that happen. And he and Jeff and their whole team went out of their way to, in 2.5 months time, take every wild dream that I threw in a group chat and try to make it happen. And we somehow made a lot of those things happen. And Saturday was all those seeds just starting to bloom in a really special way. That was the marking the 1 year of Jane and getting people together, getting my community together for the first time in person. Mm. You know, I think so much of what all of us do is so behind, you know, the walls of Instagram, and trying to build these relationships via DMs and comments and support. But seeing all those people out there, parents, kids, friends, you know, sons with their dads, daughters with their moms, like, that's something I won't forget. I'm curious to get your perspective, Bradford, because, you know, there's a 16-foot inflatable of Jane out on the golf course. There's this massive wooden sign this camp sign that we made that was like 12 feet tall. There were all these incredible pieces and details of the puzzle that we spent a lot of time on. But like, there was one moment where I just turned around and I looked out into that sort of community courtyard and just felt an energy I haven't felt before. And that was the moment for me. Like, that was what this is all about. So that's sort of my perspective, still like reeling and buzzing off of what that day was. And now it's starting to come back to real life again and keep the train moving. But I'm curious what your take was.
I felt something very similar. Jane isn't my baby, but I've seen the progression since before really it was a thing. Like, when we first met, you were talking about it. You're like, this is what I want to do. And all you had at the time was the book, which you gifted me, which I love. Thank you. to see it come full circle to an actual like community event was incredible to witness. What I saw, what I experienced, what I felt was an engaged community. I saw kids smiling and laughing and playing golf. I saw wonder and amazement at your 16-foot inflatable. I saw a meticulous attention to detail. I saw care and consideration. And for those of us who have been to golf camp, and even for those who haven't, like, I'm sure, you know, our listeners have been to camp, right? You get there, there's like this foldable table with maybe two or three camp counselors. Check in here, get your t-shirt here, corral you over here. And it's like, sure, open season, get go meet everyone. And like, then we'll like start the activity. Everything was curated. Everything was thought about. You thought about each individual person, not just the kids, the parents, the family experience. So when you say like, wouldn't it be cool to go back to golf camp? Like, you got to do that for families. Like, the parents who also maybe missed out on a golf camp or a camp slash community type experience, they got to experience it too. Because golf is this game where like, you can really enjoy it no matter how old you are, and you can still experience that childlike feel when you put the club in your hand. So what Camp Jane was able to do was give that experience to everybody, have 4-year-olds to 45-year-olds looking around like, I want to see more. You've thought about me so much that you've given me so much to take in. And there wasn't enough time. You know, there's like, I want to be here all day. So what I experienced was like, having never attended a golf camp, my first golf camp experience. And I loved it. And I haven't shut up about it.
That's awesome. I'm so glad. I mean, look, selfishly, there are a few things, right? Where it's like, you know, I have a 2-year-old daughter, and I just wanted to, I want to find more and more reasons to get her out there with me, right? So we can experience that together. And, you know, having though, even though I was running around all day, like still having those moments where I can like just see her across the crowd, go give her a hug, go walk around, walk in the grass, let her watch her grab the water balloons and just throw them on the ground and like smile. Like, that's everything to me. And when you think about, you know, we've all heard these stories about what golf camp is, right? And it is mostly these places where, you know, you're training all the time. It's drills. But I think the stigma is, you know, how can I be the best golfer instead of how can I build the healthiest relationship with this game and make it something that's core to my life that I love and I don't do so much or make it such a job that I fall out of love with it, right? So I think that's what we want, you know, what we want to do with Topgolf is like take this concept and bring it into our world and flip it on its head a bit and make it something where it is about families, people you love, spending time around the game in a way that keeps you wanting more. And now we have a flag in the sand in this sort of camp space together with Topgolf. And I think the beauty of that brand is there's a lot of them and they have resources. And I think when you can tap into that feeling of bringing people together in that way and create moments where it's not just drop the kids off, see you later, go to golf camp, it's park the car, we're all getting out of the car and going to spend the day together.
Right.
That's a special thing. And again, it's like selfishly, I just wanted to be able to create a space like that so that when my daughter's old enough to actually go and wants to be dropped off for the day, I'm at least going to get one day where we go do it together, you know, and then let her go for the week. So yeah, that was definitely the intention behind it. And, I wish all three of you could have been there to enjoy it with us, but next time we're no matter where you are, you're getting there.
No, I think Christopher, both Connor and I, we were, you know, really bummed we weren't able to make it to the inaugural Camp Jane. But that being said, you know, I feel like since our, you know, one of our initial conversations that we had when you were telling me about the book that you were creating, and it was before Jane was anything yet. It's the one thing that you really taught me was, because you reach out to me and you're like, hey man, let's talk, let's chat, let's connect. And for me, that was, you know, it's really easy on social media to send up a fire emoji, a goat emoji to your friends and gas them up. Like, that's really easy. And we all do it all the time. I'm very guilty of that. But one thing that I fail to do sometimes is actually have a real conversation with people that you meet from the internet, whether it's on FaceTime or, you know, a Zoom call. And I took that and I definitely have used that more in my own personal life whenever I see someone that's up and coming or just someone that I think is doing interesting things. I reach out and say, hey, let's chat, let's have a conversation. And I think that's so lost these days on social, because it's we all feel connected when a lot of times we really aren't. We don't even know anything about the other people. We just know their Instagram handle and their, you know, what their feed looks like.
Right.
So to see from that conversation to what you taught me to seeing what Camp Jane was through the eyes of other people on social, it was just really beautiful. And it just felt like a warm hug and you know, everything that we talk about on GGT, whether it's like our, you know, friend of the show, John Nichols, talking about, you know, golf is like recess that we never get anymore, to seeing Camp Jane and it being this family centric event, or even for people that probably came as singles that made some new friends that day. It's just so beautiful. So, thank you for all you've given me and us as the golf community.
You guys are making me cry on this damn thing. A lot of this experience for me has been about what we're doing right now. The parts that I've loved the most have been what we're doing right now, which is, like you said, like just hitting people because you appreciate what they do and jumping in their perspective and just jumping on the phone and having a conversation. Like, you know, I went to New York, you know, a couple months back, probably at this point, and like Connor and I just got a slice of pizza and walked around and went and sat in the park, and his girlfriend came and joined us, and she's also so lovely. And like, we really got to hang out, you know what I mean? And we really got to do that. And I think that's super important in just where this space is going. So much about the core of golf is going and getting paired up with random people and spending 4 hours with them. Right. Yeah. I spend more time with random people because of golf than I do with real people in my life that are friends that I've known forever, just because we happen to get paired up. And I learn so much about their lives because they're, you know, when your phone's away and you're just hitting balls and you're, you know, keeping someone in the right mindset, you know, they melt a little bit. Right. And they start to give you, you know, parts and share parts of their lives that they probably don't share with people that they're close with, because there's just a different level of connection or sense of comfort that you feel. Yeah. So we can all be grown men and still be able to say these things to each other, because golf, as much of a man sport as it is, rooted in these old traditions that are starting to sort of fade away, it's a softie at heart, really. Oh, like the sport is about like cheering people on and being there for them and knowing how to react when they actually duff the ball and they want to throw their club into the water. Those are really awkward situations, by the way. How do you guys handle that when you're in a foursome? You know, you're in a foursome. I still am trying to figure it out, but like someone really just is having a breakdown on the tee box and really just shanks one and is so mad. What's your go-to line in that scenario? Are you quiet?
Do you know them? Do you know them? Or
well, let's
random?
Do both. Random and know them.
Yeah, it depends so much on who it is, right?
Yeah, random. Hey, drop another one.
Yeah, yeah, you got this.
Throw and one down. if it's my friend, yeah, immediately recharge, immediately reload. If it's my friend, chances are we are both probably laughing, and they'll probably throw another one.
Yes.
Okay, got it. What about the person that's angry?
Yeah, exactly. There's the person that's angry that you like. I disappear within myself. You just go as quiet as possible, and that's a trauma response. That's a I've been in this situation before. Person gets angry, I disappear. I'm gone. Yeah, I'm not, keep my head down. I'm not looking at you. I'm not saying a fucking word to you. I do not exist, because you don't want to piss that person off.
Go inside myself.
Especially on the sixth hole, right. You have 3 hours left to go. Right. You know, it can get a little dodgy.
I wish we did have a universal solution for this situation. It was funny. I had a friend, we laugh about it now, but I just went on a golf trip with some friends up to Bend, Oregon randomly, which is
beautiful.
Has some of maybe the best. Yeah, beautiful. But more so than the golf, maybe the best Thai food I've ever had. Wild Rose is in downtown in Bend, Oregon. If you ever find yourself up there, incredible, blown away. But we played Tethro and Pronghorn and some of those courses.
Hell yeah!
And we're on the last day of our the trip, and we're all in the tee box, just like eight of us watching each other tee off, and one of our friends who's a great golfer. There's water right in front of the tee box over into the fairway, and he duffs three drives in a row into the water. And is just shook.
Impressive that he kept going.
Yeah, after two, man, that's
Well, because we were all doing what you said, which is like drop another one, let it rip. First hole, last day,
don't leave it on a miss.
Like just do your thing. And he couldn't really get off the tee box. It was sort of just like three in the water. And that's one of those things, because I think so much about golf is, especially on those trips, is about this like dream scenario that you sort of play out in your head of,
yes,
I'm with my friends, we're gonna have the best day ever. I see these, I see these videos that all these like golf Instagrams, all these like meme Instagrams post of like having 20 friends around you and making the putt, and everyone's like pouring beers on each other, and it's the greatest day of all time. I think we all like have these like dream, these dream world stories of like what happens in those scenarios, and you want to be a part of that. You want to bring a story home. To me, I think like that's especially on trips, that's a real core part of it, is that you're so attached to this narrative of what you hope it is,
the expectation that you let it get to you
in such a deep way. And, I was driving in the cart with him, and my for better or for worse, my solution was like, I'm just going to keep it sort of I'm going to keep it sort of mellow right now. I'm just going to keep it sort of quiet, because I want you to just sort of take a few deep breaths. All you're going to need is one good shot, right? One good strike, and you're back. And fortunately, he found it and played a great round, on the rest of the day. But I haven't actually talked about this topic with anyone else, because it's one of those things that I don't know if there's a universal solution yet on how to handle the depths of a terrible shot in front of your friends.
Carts add a whole other layer to this situation.
They really do.
If you're literally sat next, like you're both hostage to the situation. I've been, I think we've all been in this situation where like you've been that person who's hit a terrible shot time after it again.
Totally.
And then you have to, like, you might react, you might slam a club or hit something, and then you're sat in a cart next to somebody and it's silent, and you're just like tumescent with your own guilt and shame, and like that's a fucked position to be in as well.
Yes, it is.
It's so much better to be walking and just like be able to go away.
Walk it totally off.
Get some space. Yeah.
Wait, actually, I want to share a story. I may have shared it on the pod before, but we were at Rams Hill together. We were playing a match. I was playing not great. And Connor was carrying me through this match.
Sometimes, literally.
Yeah. Physically really, really and score-wise.
Yeah, literally. I did something I often do when I'm struggling. Like, I'll drop my clubs, look straight up at the sky, take a deep breath, and like tell myself, this is all so insignificant.
Mm.
I am so small. This is so insignificant. It does not matter. And I said it to Connor. He gave me like a little rub on my chest. Right. We got in the cart, we drove up to the green, and then I made a 30-foot putt.
And that's why we love golf.
Sometimes.
Because you surrendered to it.
Yeah, exactly. I surrendered to it. Like, I'm in the suck.
Yes.
I'm in
You
it.
Are the suck.
Yeah. And I embody the suck.
But you have to. This goes back to what I was saying before of like why this game is important. I will be the first to admit that I was definitely, and still sometimes it pops up of like, I was that person, like mad, like bringing bad vibes to the rest of the group, because I was just playing so bad. because you just want it so bad. I just want to be so good at this game because it's important to us. And it really took, you know, one of the moments that, or things I did that helped me really shift out of that and really be like, you got to wake up and realize like what this game can be for you is someone told me to listen to Zen Golf on audiobook. Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever listen? Mm-hmm. You ever listen to that book?
Yeah,
I read it. And, yeah, I've read it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I just started like sort of putting it on like, you know, 10 minutes at a time when I would drive to the course or just throughout my day or whatever. Cause so much of that book is also such a parallel to life. You know, there's a lot of that book where they don't even say the word golf. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. it's like,
right.
It just applies. So, you know, I think there are moments like that throughout this experience of like what my relationship is with the game where I was like, once you get to that angry point, like really angry point where you just can't get out of it, it's drop the clubs, look at the sky and rub your chest and say how insignificant it all is. Because truthfully, like that's not, it just takes away from the point. Like the point is we're there to spend time with each other. We're there to hit some terrible shots and laugh at them. We're there to hit some incredible shots we didn't even know we had. And that's what keeps us coming back.
It does make you feel for professional golfers though, who the point is to play very well. And when it doesn't work for them, there is no escape. Yeah. Like the insignificance of it is kind of moot. So
It doesn't exist. It's also
for us. It's great to say, yes, none of this matters. And we're here for the hang. We're here for the vibe. And that is a really good way to get out of that mindset. But I personally was just last week down in Atlanta trying to break par on camera, and the front nine went terribly, horribly, horribly wrong. And I felt for the first time in a long time, because I play for vibe and fun and hang most often, I don't really get to that angry place that much. It's not a part of me, and I'm not really an angry person to begin with. But as this round was devolving in front of my eyes and I could see the final product, this video on YouTube being watched by so many people, and you know, the oncoming embarrassment that I was feeling, I got hot, angry hot, silent hot, which is for me when you know it's really bad.
It's so good.
I've never wanted to disappear within my own asshole more than that exact moment. And I was like, you can't run away from it. If the truth of it is you have to play well today, so we have to figure out what the solution is there. Cause reminding yourself that this is insignificant, I don't know what can be done about that.
But I think those comeback stories, like you see, like the, you know, the presser with Billy Horschel crying a few weeks ago, you know, like a couple of months ago, yeah. Right. Of like knowing that he's putting so much work in. And it's just not, and it's so close, but it's just not there. And I think that the game at that level is such, they're just so good that if you're off by, you know, half a percentage point, whatever that means for you, you're off, like you're not even close. And, you know, that's why when you see Ricky come back and win and Billy, you know, come turn it around and like
Lucas Glover stories,
the Lucas Glover story, like an incredible story where it's like, he's been around for decades and you come back and now two weekends in a row, he's just the best golfer in the world. Like what? Like it's just that it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, that's why this game is magic. Like you feel it one day and you feel like you're on top of the world. And the next day you feel like you've never played before. I was listening to an interview, a Kobe interview a little while ago, where he was just saying sort of something similar about basketball, where it's like, you know, some days the hoop feels like it's the size of a swimming pool and sometimes it feels like the size of a dime. And it's just about making the most of when it feels like it's the size of a swimming pool. But there's something about this where there's so many elements that go into like that golf swing and making it all connect and making it all work and making what's going on here, most importantly, actually manifest what's happening on the course.
The mind.
That it's just so unique in that way. But ultimately, it's like, dude, Camp Jane, you know, the hole in one challenge that we did at the end, where I got the whole camp, you know, 100 people just around this sort of haystack around the tee box with a 75 yard shot over the water to the green.
That's so cool. Mm.
These kids were just stepping up, you know, 2-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 13-year-olds, mm-hmm. like just stepping up in front of all these people, you know, it was like a mini, you know, waste management, like number 16 in waste mm-hmm. management. And, you know, I'm on the megaphone, just like chirping at all, you know, chirping at people, chirping at all my friends, you know, just getting people into it. And
back off challenging 6-year-olds. That's great.
You know, I laid off on the 6-year-olds because I think even just them stepping up was incredible. So that was more just positive encouragement. But, you know, I don't know how old he was, but Andrew, was one of our sort of younger kids there, probably, you know, 11, 12, 13, somewhere in that range. Like he stepped up and out of the whole camp, like won that thing and put it to like 2 inches. You know, I stepped up and shanked it into the water in front of the whole thing. And it was my camp. You know what I mean? So there's just a lot of beauty that comes out of like, no matter who you are in your life, right? Like if you're incredibly shy, if you're incredibly loud, confident, whatever it may be, in that setting, you can step up and have to have some ice in your veins. And it was just really cool out of all the age groups, all the skill levels. Like we had, you know, a younger guy that was not the loudest, you know, the loudest at camp, pretty, you know, pretty shy, pretty to himself, have a moment where he was a lion, you know what I mean? And high five his dad afterwards and like share that together. That's golf, dude. That's what it is to me.
You know, and if you remember, Chris, you and I were talking shortly after that, and his coach came over, like his mm-hmm. his like program mentor came over and was like, "You don't know what that did for him."
Wow.
He is one of the shyest kids in our whole program. He does not talk, he does not cause a fuss, he falls in line, he does exactly what he's supposed to do, and then he goes home, does not cause any problems. And as a golfer, a competitive golfer, you know, like we want to see a little fire. We want to see some competitiveness. And they were concerned, like, is he ever going to rise to that occasion because he has talent? And then he did that in front of 100 people. His coach was like, "You have no idea what that's going to do for him." And he got a trophy that's taller than him. So like, no, Camp Jane doesn't count toward like
World Golf Rankings,
FedEx Cup points, you know? But for him, that's going to change his life. That's a ripple effect that we don't know how that will manifest for
right.
him.
That's the coolest.
Yeah, that was incredible.
That's the coolest. He took it. I got a picture the next day of he took the trophy to like his own, back to his own like camp with his own team.
Let's go.
And it was just they took a big group picture of everyone just sort of looking at it, standing together with him in the middle. And he's the man. Like, that's it.
I hope he brings it to show and tell on the
That'd
first day.
I hope so too.
Hey, Andrew, today is not show and tell.
Pull it in the wagon.
He puts it on a chain and wears it on his neck the whole year. Chris, there's so much, like one of the things that I love so much about Jane is that there is so much nostalgia connected to the brand. And when you were describing Camp Jane at the top there, you said you wanted to create something, this camp experience that you never had. And I want to kind of check in on that piece of it, because I think nostalgia is a funny thing, right? It's a really joyous emotion, but it's also it's one that's filled with a lot of sadness too, because you're kind of looking back at these moments or memories that you don't get back, that are gone, they're mm-hmm. fleeted. And so with your brand, with Jane, like when I see the images, the cartoons that you create along with your team, I feel so much joy and connection to a younger version of myself. But I have to say, feel some type of sadness, and I can't exactly pinpoint why or where that's coming from. So I wanted to sort of ask you about where nostalgia fits in with your life. What are you creating this to fill? If it's a void, if it's something new, can you speak to that?
Such a good question, and such an interesting take on just how it's like personally making you feel, the good and the bad. I mean, look, I think for camp specifically, the nostalgia piece was really the vessel just to get people to feel a certain way and walk in with a certain kind of energy to create what that day ended up being, right? Like like I said before, it's you can dress up a space to the nines, but if the energy of the people there is, you know, I'm trying to be the coolest person in the room, right? Yeah. I'm at the party. I'm like,
we've been to enough of those events.
We've all been to a lot of those, right? And I think, you know, if that's the energy you're set up walking into, then it's an L immediately,
yeah.
right? Like yeah. you're not going to give people the space to just sort of feel safe and open up and let loose a little bit and want to talk to people they don't know and want to say hi to the person next to them. And, you know, when I think about nostalgia and like this whole line I've been using around this, which is like feeling like a kid again, like mm-hmm. that to me is a really clear way of tapping into that feeling and tapping into the ability to let, you know, the coolest person in a room walk in and not feel like they have to put that show on that day, you know, for themselves. And so with the, you know, with the wider brand, I think, you know, the art and the colors and why we spent so much time like sort of drawing all these versions of Jane and what Jane looks like, is because I want a lot of it to just go sort of unspoken, right? I want a lot of it to just be the magic of seeing, you know, seeing it pop up on your feed and triggering a feeling, right? Maybe a feeling that feels really welcoming, maybe because the colors are, you know, bright and they pop and they feel more playful. Maybe that's going to make you smile a little bit. And maybe, you know, when Jane is like on the roller coaster of emotion, right? It's just like one of those funny things that like we normally in our real world, like think about all the time, but can't sort of animate in a way that takes us beyond what's possible here. So yeah, I don't know, like nostalgia to me, and I've said this before in the past quickly, but you know, my dad came to the US with zero, right? And my dad and my mom, and really built his own life and his own world, and his own business from scratch, just from passion and in what he worked in. And when I was really young, he was invited to Bay Hill to go for something. It was like some corporate, like we're going to fly out our people and go, you know, go have fun. But he was invited to Bay Hill and got to meet Arnold Palmer, right? And that experience for him, and this was before I even knew what golf was, right? Or even cared about golf, but that was put on such a pedestal where he would talk about that moment all the time, because for him, coming from nothing, it meant success. It meant I made it. If I can meet Arnold Palmer at a golf event where golf is seen as this like,
his
golf most event. Successful people in the world, his golf event, you know, the most successful people in the world and, you know, X, Y, and Z, like that means I've gotten somewhere, and that's pretty awesome. And he would tell me that story all the time. And especially as I started sort of getting into golf and playing more and making it part of my life, like he would continue to bring it up because it was this proud moment that we can connect over, you know, as just son and father. And, you know, when I think about nostalgia and going back to like my childhood and what I'm tapping into, I think about that moment a lot because of how, you know, him telling that story to me probably made him feel like he was a dad I can be proud of, right? And now, you know, my dad came to Camp Jane and you know, probably up until that point was sort of just like, with most of my career was probably just like, I don't know what you do, but you know, like it seems like you're doing okay, and that's great, right? And now, especially after leaving music after 10 years and jumping into this and really just trying to grind and figure it out, like having him walk into Topgolf and see what this was like my proud moment back to him, and that sort of all came full circle in a really special way. You know, like he put the bucket hat on and was sort of just like standing at the merch booth, like helping my sister like get people what they needed, and would walk around and just like take it all in and try to help people. And like, you know, that to me is the full circle of like nostalgia and bringing back the things from the memories from my childhood that were emotionally like meaningful and impactful to me. And now having them now putting myself in that position and giving that sort of back to him was pretty cool.
Fuck, Chris.
Damn. Crying in the club.
I'm really happy that you had that moment. You should feel really proud about that.
There was a moment, it was kind of toward the end of the day, where it was just us on that hole. It was like you and a bunch of your friends. And your dad came and sat on the hay bale, watching you and your friends just hack away, laughing, cracking jokes. And what I saw was like stoicism to an extent, but pride. Mm. And I don't know if you saw that, but I did. Like I was kind of like, I was letting you and your friends cook, and I was kind of standing off to the side observing, and he didn't take his eyes off of you. Mm. And I was like, damn, I wish I could capture this moment for Chris. But what I witnessed was pride and like fulfillment and, a dream fulfilled.
Yeah. Mm. That's so awesome. I mean, it's really one of those things where, I think a lot of us, we're all, definitely for me, I mean, it's something that I talk about on a weekly basis with my life coach, therapist, whatever you want to call her. But like acceptance is for some reason, which I mean, I obviously know the reason now, but like acceptance is very important to me. And it's something I'm trying from other people. Right. And it's something I work towards devaluing in my life as much as possible, because so much of this process has been getting really comfortable with trusting my own opinions, trusting what I feel like intuitively is the right path to go on, and pulling back on texting all my friends to get their opinion on if they think is this cool, or am I moving the right direction, or trying to call people to help me because I think maybe I can't do it, or maybe I would need a shortcut, right? And I don't know. I think like the dad, the father son connection, I think is like it's on its own sort of tier of that conversation, where I think a lot of the our dads or dads from that generation, I think the describing it as stoic is so dead on, because there's something like deep down in there. There is that pride, or there is that resentment, or there is that whatever the relationship is, and all are okay, but it's not often shared, right? It's often just sort of kept in them. And you giving me that perspective of what he was feeling and seeing and doing, whether I knew it or not, is like the biggest gift, right? Because he, we definitely talked about it afterwards, and we talked about just what a spectacle that was and how cool it was to see. But, he's not gushing over it in the same way that if my son or daughter was doing something that they were super proud of, we're all built in a way where it's like, I'm going to pick that person up and throw them in the sky and be
Simba style.
Yeah. It's totally Simba style, and be so hyped for them accomplishing what they didn't even realize they could. Right. And I think that's what's really cool about even as men moving forward, right? Like golf, not golf, life, whatever. I think there's a big shift in how we know we have to change to open up a bit, be way more vulnerable, and look in the mirror, understand like how we need to be better in order for our children, the people around us to grow up in a way that they'd be proud of. So, I think that whole connection with the generation of the past and where the world seems to be moving is to me really exciting. And obviously, it's another one of the reasons why I love you guys, because you do wear your hearts on your sleeves in a time where it's starting to be a bit more accepted, but we're not fully there yet. And there's a lot of work to do, especially in this game.
I hope it's okay that I say this, but like you're such a stunning, beautiful person. Like you're a gorgeous man.
Oh my god!
Add to that, you've lost it. No, but I'm serious. Like, and add to that, like you're incredibly, you're hot. Charismatic. Like you're charming. You're infectiously enthusiastic. You're a really deep thinker. Obviously, you've shown you're effortlessly well-spoken. The list goes on. Conventional wisdom might say if you're starting a brand and you have all of those qualities, you want to put yourself front and center and attract all the flies to have your face and voice all over the thing. But instead, you created this cartoon, like anthropomorphic golf ball named Jane, who spits out these like delicious, clever lessons about golf and life and culture and all these things that work on so many levels and speak to everyone at all ages equally. One of the reasons that I love Jane is that, but one of the reasons that I respect what you've built is the restraint that you've showed in not making the whole thing about you. So I guess if there's a question in there, it's can you share a little bit about like what motivated that decision to keep yourself out of the spotlight and to focus instead on this little cartoon storyteller?
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, what sits you the fucking right?
It's a really good question. And I love you. You said so many incredibly sweet things. This is a really interesting topic, I think, you know, for me specifically, because a lot of the world that we're in is about building your own personal brand and building a following, having people really connect with you so they can trust your opinions, trust whatever you put out, trust wherever you're going, trust whatever advice you have for them. And, you know, a lot of my music experience was really focused on finding artists, but more than that, finding people that were infectious in so many ways and talented and had vision for themselves, you know, and really focusing on how do I do whatever I can to give those people resource to go and time, most importantly, to go see through what they knew they had in their hearts and their minds. Right. And, you know, and coming into this world and thinking about the concept of like creating a character, it's really a lot of the same thought process from developing an artist or managing an artist or signing an artist to a record label and helping them sort of see that vision and crafting the narrative and crafting what the story is, right? It's ultimately Billie Eilish can go make a country album tomorrow if she wanted, and all her fans will still be there and support it, and it'll be the biggest country album in the world because they're not bought in from day one. They weren't just bought in on one song. They were bought in on who she was, what her style was, what her attitude was, what she was saying, and the fact that she was just tapping into a, you know, a real nerve with young girls at that time and how they were feeling. And now they're there with her in the same way they're there with Taylor Swift, right? Like, and that's how you become, you know, impactful on a global level. So, you know, for me personally, coming into this space, like, I love people. I love being social. I love, like, people are my energy, the source in life, like having these kinds of conversations, really spending time with people. That's why I don't know, like, I love a good FaceTime or a phone call. I really don't like texting at all or emailing. I think there's so much loss in translation there. But thinking about this, it's like, I really intuitively, like, I don't have a here's why answer for you, but just intuitively, I really felt like this whole thing wasn't about me. It was about putting me behind the scenes as much as humanly possible and creating this character that cannot look a certain way, that cannot be, you know, a certain age, that cannot immediately be a certain gender, that cannot be put in a box that someone would immediately put me into if I stood up and said all the things I was saying right now, right? Or just through the Instagram. That's why I protect it so much. And that's why I really do try to stay behind the scenes as much as possible. And, you know, like even the, like on like the podcast front or whatever, like this is like, I've done two of these. I will do this because I love you guys and I know we can have a really thoughtful conversation here. But ultimately, like, as I even think about what my presence is going forward in relation to the brand, I know it's important that people feel a real connection to the intention of like why I'm doing this, right? I do think that's obviously really important and what my part of my story is, so they can feel it through Jane. But I ultimately want Jane to bring people into Jane's world as much as possible and let that be the vehicle that delivers the message and let that be, you know, the character that people connect with, because it feels like the only way to me that this can actually have the kind of long-term impact that I believe and know it can.
It's so easy, and we've seen so many examples of people starting, I'm using air quotes, golf brands by screen printing a bunch of t-shirts and hats and stuff like that. You built a fucking world. Like, you created a world. You are a god in the world of Jane, and that's really hard. It's really hard to do. And again, to restrain yourself from it, yet be its creator, I think is a really incredible thing. So thank you, first of all. Because I think, yeah, you've created a world and given the real world something really beautiful and reflective to look at. And that's it's a really special thing.
Thank you. You know, it's funny, like I get like even at camp or even to see my DMs, like Bradford, it was funny. Like I obviously had to like give an opening speech to like welcome people to what the day was. Cause a lot of people that bought tickets and brought their families like really didn't have a ton of information on like what it was going to be. And I did that intentionally because I just wanted people to come in with their minds open, right? And not have the full plan so they can decide they only want to come for this part or that part or whatever it may be. But, you know, I was thinking afterwards, I was like, I wonder how many of those people even thought like, or who is this person, right? Or like, it's one of those James, where it's like, I get DM. You know, it's like idea.
Who's that guy?
That's hilarious. I get DMs all the time. Like I get DMs from people and they like, I'll be responding, we'll be talking and I'll like, they'll ask me like, oh yeah, what's your name? And I'll be like, oh yeah, it's Chris. And they're like, oh, you're a guy. That's been the really interesting. Yeah. It's kind of cool. I think that to me is like, oh, okay. We're in the right space. Yeah. Like this is good. Yeah. Like it's not, it's, and I give a lot of credit. Do I give a lot of credit to grown up people our age that are allowing themselves to feel okay with connecting with an animated golf ball character? You know what I mean? And like supporting that and like not letting themselves get too caught up in, oh, this isn't fashion, or this isn't like, you know, this isn't what I'm used to, or this isn't the kind of bravado that I'm used to, you know, in this space. And I don't know. I think that's sort of why it's hit a vein a bit with people, is because it is bringing a little bit of a lighter side where that camp energy of like, I don't need to be on point here. I don't need to be the best version of myself here. I don't need to be this person that people want me to be. I can just sort of do what I do. And if people accept that, they accept that. And if not, keep it moving.
Fuck those people.
Fuck them kids. No, that's, I think that's really beautiful and selfless as well. In a world where everyone tries to make things about themselves and, you know, everyone has, especially on social and the internet, everyone has a twinge of narcissistic tendencies. You live in Los Angeles, you know, in Hollywood, you know, it's just like everyone's trying to make something about themselves, even when it's not about themselves. So it's like I said, that's something that the three of us saw very early on in you and what you're doing. And yeah, I mean, we could give you your flowers all day, Chris, but, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, but it's not even about like it. And by the way, I hope what I'm saying and from my perspective doesn't feel like shade in any way on the other person, like on people that do that. Right. Because I do think it's like that it's all incredibly important. At the end of the day, it is just about connection, right? And I think a lot of the camp counselors, a lot of the people that were there that are more prominent, influential people in our space, even at camp, those are a lot of people that I haven't necessarily spent so much time with, right? But I was really happy to actually get to have a human experience, with some of them more than obviously Bradford, I know, and some of them, Justin and Allie, I know a bit more, but it was cool, and Hallie, obviously, and, Ray, I'm getting to know more. Like, it's cool to get to have that kind of experience where we're not just all at the party. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And getting a drink together, or like doing the quick stop and chat and what's going on? How are you? Okay, I'm going to go to the simulator. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's what I love. And I think there's a lot of, and you guys are a testament to this. There's a lot of brands. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of interest in golf. And ultimately, like for me, I just want, if I could have any wish, just like the people that have great intentions and know who they are, being a part of like representing those brands, being the face of those brands, being the face of those messages, leading it forward. Because then the biggest mission of giving people the best first impression of the game is happening through your face and your face and your face and what you're saying through your channels and what you guys are actually standing next to,
yeah,
as opposed to just being a free for all for the money grab.
Should we get into the meat and potatoes here for Chris?
Let's eat some meat and taters.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. We are now in season 5 of the podcast, which is pretty gnarly. We never thought we'd make it this far.
Can I stop you just really quick?
Absolutely.
And give you guys your flowers,
because
you're just showering me. I'm just in like a ball pit of flowers. I can't even breathe. I sincerely do want to give you guys your flowers and congratulate you on being this far into this journey together. I think like you guys are, in a nutshell, what the beauty of golf is: finding each other without having a past together and deciding that your three perspectives on this game coming together to build something special is what you've built with Group Golf Therapy, and have the courage really to have this kind of perspective and create a platform around this kind of perspective is essential to what is happening here and what needs to continue to happen going forward. So, having partners, doing things in groups is much harder than people realize. There's a lot of added work that comes with having to compromise and talk through ideas and ultimately like finding a place the three of you feel good about and when you're ready to move forward. So you guys deserve all the flowers in the world for getting this far, and it feels like you almost haven't even started in many ways, because the what I would assume is that the mission is so much bigger than this and where we are. And I just, I'm here to support you guys and do whatever I can to continue to champion that, because I think that's where we're very aligned, is knowing how important these conversations are for the growth of the game.
God bless you.
Bless you and your lineage.
God, I'm gonna.
Okay, I'm done.
You're whole.
No. Sorry, Drew. Go ahead.
Your entire lineage.
All of them.
You, Chris, that means a lot.
Yeah, we're happy that that fate and golf has brought us all together, and we're just getting started. But to that point, we're just getting started with season 5, and we have a whole new. We have some familiar and some new faces for the meat and potato questions. So I know you're a long time listener. I'm gonna hit you with one of our new ones. What are some of your favorite golf sounds?
Can I say two things?
As many as you want.
Of course.
Okay. First thing that comes to mind for me is there is that angelic birds chirping in the early morning dew on the grass. I just think about Augusta. I think about the Masters. I think about the mic that's just in Amen Corner with the birds chirping. Yeah. It just is like, I want this. Like, can I just like have this like a soundbite of this?
That's so specific.
That I can just listen to. That to me,
they just got a boom in the azalea.
No one needs, yeah, no one needs to know that that is piped in by Augusta. No one needs to know.
Right.
Yes.
Don't ruin it for me because I don't even know I knew that. But no, that to me is a iconic golf sound that brings me a level of peace that not many things can, to be honest with you. And then number two, close second, but when someone really knows how to play golf and hits the shit out of a golf ball, it just sounds different. It's a sound I chase, and it's a sound I hope I'll one day be able to achieve. And those two sounds to me are just the perfect cocktail of pure zen and bliss. How would you even describe, I mean, Connor, you're better with words than I, how would you describe the sound of that golf ball just snapping off of like a drive? Like what's the word?
Rory McIlroy.
It's the sound.
Yeah, Rory McIlroy. Is that what it is?
Rory McIlroy. It's divine compression. It's just like it's the creation of a new world. It is the Big Bang. It is
the Oppenheimer.
It's the Oppenheimer.
It's God. Yeah. It's God and Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Touching 100%. Fingers. Yeah. There's something godlike in that sound, for sure. Very, very quick anecdote. I was shooting something a couple months ago with Michael Thorbjornsson, who's a top amateur. He's going to turn pro sort of any minute now. And we were at the driving range warming up together, and he was in front of me. I was behind him. We were there for 15 minutes or so. I was hitting shot after shot after shot. All of a sudden I hit one that's good. And he turns around. He said, "That sounded really good." And that was the first time that he said that in like 30 shots. Oh. And I felt so unbelievably seen. I was like, he's been listening this entire time waiting for that one sound. And finally I hit that one sound, and he was like, "Nice shot." Yeah. And I was like, fuck. I was like, I specifically positioned myself behind you so you wouldn't see me hitting golf balls, but he was still paying attention with his eardrums. And that just shows that it's not just like they're paying attention. Those fuckers know.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny though? Like the phrase, "Oh, that sounded good," right? Yeah. Like that sounded good. You have no sense of the direction. You have no sense of the ball flight. You have no sense of where it was, but you know.
Everyone knows that sound.
You just kind of know.
You know.
We've all been to the range.
Yeah. You know. Like,
you don't have to see the person. You don't have to see the person to know if that shot was good. Because you hear a lot of bad sounds at the driving range.
Yeah.
That sounded good. I love that.
I was like, fuck.
That's so incredible.
Thank you.
And also the fact that he didn't have to say that either. Like he could have just not. So that means he'd been thinking about it. He's like, when's this guy gonna flush one?
Okay, moving right along. Favorite golf smells.
Yeah, I know this is like an iconic one for you guys. Let me ask you a question. What inspired this question for you?
I'll give my answer. I think for us, golf is such a sensory experience. And for myself, as somebody who has struggled with anxiety in the past, tapping into my senses, if I'm feeling particularly activated or overstimulated, can be a really helpful way for me to recenter and refine balance. And so I think for all of us, we've had, you know, just in our early conversations about what group golf therapy was going to be, we quickly agreed that the sensory experiences within the game were some of the moments that we enjoyed the most. The sounds of the birds chirping, the smell of the salt in the ocean that you're playing next to, all of those things feel like what golf is on a molecular sensory level. And that's for me, it's just part of one of the beautiful things about the game.
It's a hell of an answer. Because for me, I think I couldn't be more with you on everything you just said. And when I think about this question, there isn't actually there's almost like a lack of an answer. But I think like the only answer I can think of is like, I just love being able to be out there, being on the grass, being in that sort of open field and being able to take that like big deep breath, right? And whatever the hell that smells like is what it's meant to smell like. And you're just there. And you know what it smells like? It smells like presence. You know? It smells like you're there taking it in and really like feeling good about like where you are, your surroundings, and like what's ahead of you. So I think that's sort of my answer, is like, it's, I don't have one smell that immediately like nails it for me. It's almost like deep breaths for me mark a sign of like presence and being there in that moment. And I think that's what's special.
That's valid though, because how often are we taking those deep breaths in places that we normally go? I'm not like taking a deep breath at Whole Foods or like, you know, at the gas maybe station or, you know,
yeah,
maybe at the gas. I actually do enjoy that.
Petrol breath.
But right. But yeah, the golf course is definitely one of those places that reminds you to take that deep breath. Because like, yo, this round is going to be over before I know it, and I need to appreciate this moment. So the golf smell question is, it's grounding, like Connor said, and more recently, friend of the show Will Lowry shared with us his thoughts, and in that music and smells are the closest thing that we have to a time machine. So if you can, I almost like to follow up that smell question with, where does that transport you? Like, whatever your smell answer is, and it sounds like there may be a lack of one, but I know what you may have an image in your head. You know, where does that smell or that deep breath transport you? Is it a specific course? Is it a specific time in your life? A moment?
It's sort of this scene that runs through my head of just like, it's funny just thinking about this now and thinking about camp, but like what I wanted to create there. But I have this scene in my head of like the clear blue sky, the sun is out. It's like just the orange like tint is like, that hue is just over everything. And it's just like kids running around, kites in the air with like those laughs just like echoing around the space. And when I take a deep breath and I'm out in the golf course and I'm walking the fairway, that is the joy I'm like tapping into. Like that's where it sends me. Like that's for, and I don't know why, and I don't know why that's where it takes me, but there is this like, this sort of childlike freedom of just running around and almost like feeling like, how is this even real? Right. And I think about that all the time on golf courses, especially like nicer courses that I go play that take up a lot of valuable space in a certain part of town or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
It's like, how is this a thing? Like, how is this a real thing that's just out here, this big plot of grass that we're just cutting into like little shapes and going and trying to conquer every time we're out here? Like, it's pretty wild. I know a lot of people have maybe different takes on that part of the conversation. But for me in this moment and in this context, it does make me feel like I'm just a kid at the playground, and I'm hearing like those laughs and those sounds of just joy and freedom, like swirl around in the wind.
Chris, you are our resident musicsman. And, I know you're going to have a banger of an answer for this. So we're playing at, Camp Jane round two, and you're gonna give everyone a walk-up song. What would Chris's walk-up song be for your first shot at the first tee?
All right, I'm just gonna go back to this to me is nostalgia, right? This to me is nostalgia. And we the first CD someone ever gave me was Biggie Ready to Die when I was way too young.
Damn.
and I still hear like the swirling intro of like Things Done Change and like those songs just in my head, because like they gave it to me right before I got on a plane. And I put my headphones on and I had my CD player and I put it in and I just listened to it.
Ooh.
And I just listened to it on repeat, on repeat, on repeat, on repeat. So that was really like my first moment of like falling in love with music. And that's like at an elite level, right? With an elite kind of person. That stood the test of time. And as I grew up and sort of like, you know, was in high school, the whole like dance music, like rave culture, like that starting to like come back and be a thing. I just sort of hit the timing on that, right? And sort of rode that wave. Like, that was my first golf, if you will. Like, that was like, oh, there's something happening here. And it feels special. It feels like there's a community. It feels like there are these events popping up and these names popping up, and you can hop on SoundCloud and just like find this new artist, this new song, this new amazing thing like every day. And it was like a treasure hunt almost, right? And like, that's where I really fell in love with music. And so a lot of my friends and I have so many incredible like moments together where we, you know, we'd go to these shows, we'd listen together, we'd be in our house, we'd turn the music on, we'd be on our computers, like rolling through SoundCloud, like seeing who can download songs faster to try to show the next person and like one up the next person, like what we just found. And there was one song throughout that experience, on that sort of roller coaster of that wave, which was a Calvin Harris song called "You Used to Hold Me." And it's just the song that comes on every time to this day. And when I used to DJ in college and when I used to like do all that, like that was like my song. Like that's how you knew, like that was my marquee moment. And it was a song all my friends would just, wherever they were, rally to the dance floor, get there, put their hands around each other and start just jumping up and down in a circle. And what's funny is like all this time later, like at our weddings, or now people are getting married, now we're going to each other's, you know, those kinds of events with each other. Once that song comes on, we're all right back. And it's like, it's that level of energy that takes us back to those moments that we get to enjoy together because of that song and how powerful that song was for us. So no, it's not the coolest song in the world, or, you know, whatever. Like, I'm not going to pick some like whatever, just to try to say I'm like a music tastemaker, but that song to me and my group of friends has played a role in connecting us in a way that a lot of things really don't have the power to. And that's why I fell in love with music. And that's why I committed so much of my life to music, is because when I first started, it made me feel things that and sort of open a door to my soul in a way that nothing else really could. And it still plays that role for me. So that's the song.
There's no such thing as guilty pleasure. There's just pleasure. It just makes you feel something, and it doesn't matter what it is. But yeah, you just know.
Amen.
What's on your champion's dinner menu? Let's see, win the Camp Jane Open, your own tournament.
you
invite yourself back the next year and get to.
You Dwight Schrute it, and you're the Hay King.
Yeah, you Dwight Schrute yourself.
You are the Hay King.
What's on the champions? I know you're also a big food person too. If being educated is well read, you are well eaten.
I do love me some food. It is my music, food, and golf are those three passions of my life that make me that take me places. I'm also indecisive in this way. Like, I, to be honest with you, my champions dinner would be like an intercontinental buffet in like Las Vegas. You know what I mean? Like, it would be such a mix and mash of things.
Sushi and I mean, pancakes.
Seriously.
Hell yeah.
Seriously. I went to breakfast with Sean Yu yesterday, and I made him split banana pancakes with me. Side note, but pepperoni and pineapple pizza is a must for me. I know
it, bitch.
I know it's controversial.
I love pepperoni and pineapple.
Yeah, thank you. I know. Listen, I know we're meant to be together.
Come on, come on.
Pepperoni pineapple for me with ranch is elite level. Pizza, I love a good traditional pie as well. I with Connor went on a, you know, part one and maybe part two of my, you know, roll through New York trying to eat at every pizza place I possibly could have. Pizza is special. It's just a special
pizza love
item.
Pizza is love. Yeah.
A lot of pizza love. So that's one. I love a good shrimp tempura roll. I love a shrimp tempura roll. That just hits every single time. I love, I'm a huge fan of Indian food. I love a good like shrimp tikka masala when it's really hitting. with the right non. You just dip, rip, dip. I'll take myself to a very uncomfortable place, like in terms of my fullness level.
In that meal. We've all pushed the limits on fullness when it comes to shrimp tikka masala.
Yeah. So, you know, those are some things. I think dessert would have to be pizookie, probably.
From BJ's?
Oh, hell. The pizookie Don. That's
a Glendale staple.
Yeah, that's the king. I mean, look, if anyone's making a chocolate chip cookie in a skillet and putting ice cream on it and they're not giving their proper credit to BJ's, then I don't know what you're doing, number one. But that to me is like an ultimate dessert. Just warm. Just a deep dish cookie.
I didn't know what the
pizookie
provenance was. I didn't know BJ's owned it like that. But all right.
In my opinion, that's a BJ staple. Like that's like,
okay.
You know, we're here.
That's what I associate it with.
Yeah. So that's that. And then I don't know. I've been really like thinking about craving recently is like just a really cold cube, like the pebble ice. Iced tea, but like not too sweet, but also not bitter. Little hint of like some fruit flavoring in there, just to like wash all that down. Because that's a heavy meal. That's probably the most disgusting combination of food of all time together.
We pulling up, but
if you guys want to eat, just let me know. Because that's like where
put
I'm
it
at.
On one plate. No, let's
no dividers.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. Let it melt.
Yeah, no dividers. That's where I'm at on food.
I love it. It's your menu. So it's all you.
Right.
We'll be there.
We're just pulling up.
I want the bazooki.
Chris, man, this feels like a part one of
a
series of conversations.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything that you do.
I appreciate you guys. I love you guys sincerely. This is one of those where it's easy to just get on and just have a conversation, you know, whether we got microphones or headphones on or whatever it may be. But yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad we waited till the right time so we can get into it.
Yeah, truly. Yes. Thank you, Chris.
Love you, my boy.
Hey.
Love you guys.